Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel, live broadcast and podcast. Today, we are talking to trail runner, coach and guide, Kim Collison, who has just come sixth in the Monte Rosa Sky Marathon. And other accolades include breaking the Lakeland 24-hour fell running record in 2020, running 78 summits in 23 hours, 43 minutes, which he actually helped Andy Berry to break last month. And he also still holds the men's Winter Bob Graham record. So welcome, Kim. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. Just fresh back from the Alps yesterday. So feeling a little bit weary from that race, but pretty good really.
Awesome. Well, congratulations on the Monte Rosa race. We're going to chat about that in just a moment. But first, I just need to mention that this podcast is sponsored by one of your sponsors, Currens, the New Zealand 100% blackcurrant supplement for trail and ultra runners. It's packed full of anti-inflammatory anthocyanins, and Currens won a Best Recovery Product Award in 2020 and 2021. It's been called the Nike Vaporfly of trail running supplements. And if you don't feel the recovery benefits, you get your money back. So what's not to like? Obviously, it's not doing you any harm, Kim, which we'll get to in the nutrition part of this podcast and broadcast. But first, I want to just circle right back to the start, if that's okay, because it's really interesting. You started your career as an outdoor instructor working with young people at Outward Bound. How did you get into that and what did you love about that?
Oh, how did I get into Outward Bound? I guess it would have started with doing a kind of degree in outdoor education, with getting some qualifications in mountain leading and canoeing and kayaking, and then coming back from some traveling and working as a sort of dive instructor. The next natural progression was to land in the Lake District, and Outward Bound happened to fall at the right time, and then just met those things kind of collided. And I started my career at Outward Bound, which lasted a decade.
Wow, cool. And what did you love about that? Because were you mainly working with young people there? Is that what they do, Outward Bound?
Yes, yeah, so helping, trying to develop young people using journeying. So we'd take them out for two nights or a night camping, take them for a journey along Allswater on the canoes, back throwing some gorge walking and some climbing, and all the time trying to encourage them to develop out of their comfort zone in some ways, and then develop them in that way. So given that, it worked for a lot of kids in a different way from school. So it just, with learning and raising aspirations in some senses.
Yeah, and sort of showing them that it's not just academia as well, like there are these other jobs that you can do or other hobbies that you can have. It's really amazing. I really respect anyone who's in the outdoor industry.
And also that just giving some children that connection with nature.
Yeah, sad, isn't it?
You know, a lot of the children were from inner city areas, Birmingham, London, Manchester, and their exposure to the outdoors was minimal. So just being part of that and sharing how we love the outdoors and the mountains and the lakes and sharing that passion was a huge part. So hopefully encourages them to care for it more as well.
Yes, yeah, because you can't really care for something that you don't know about or don't care about. Yeah. And so you were doing kayaking and kind of and biking and stuff back then. Was that how you got into the adventure racing world? Because that's how I know you. I've known you for like a decade or so from adventure racing. How did you start doing that?
Well, I guess that started quite young when I started doing some ace races as a late teenager. So that was kind of a 5-hour or perhaps a 2-day, lots of 5 different stages of orienteering, whether that's kayaking, biking or running in a stage format. And then I was always watching on the like Discovery Channel, the like big adventure races that lasted several days. I thought, that's what I want to do.
So I thought that too. And then I did some and I was like, oh, it's a bit hard. No sleep. Oh my goodness.
that joy of journeying through wild places and pushing yourself to your limits just appealed to my nature. So after training, you living in Ullswater or working in Ullswater was perfect. You had the lake for the paddling, you've got all the trails for the mountain biking and bells for the running on, and it just was a natural progression into the adventure racing and challenging and going to world championships as part of a 4-person team was a fabulous experience.
Yeah, so it seems like teamwork and bringing out the best in people is part of your joy of being in the outdoors. But now you focus mainly on the running. Why have you dropped the biking and the kayaking? What draws you to the running side of things?
I think the my most joy comes from the flow and that you get from running, and that's probably why I kind of was the best at that particular sport out of the three and got the most reward from. And then I guess there's always a limiting factor of time and cost through adventure racing, and so running became much more affordable and was my favourite activity, so I kind of progressed and channeled into that more and more and let the others slip over time.
Yeah.
Still really big grand adventures you can have while ultra running or running.
Yeah, and it's not as hard, is it, to just put on a pair of running shoes and go running, whereas adventure racing, I remember there was all the bike faff, the kayak faff, like actually getting a kayak and it's like limited opportunity to paddle. And it was just a lot more things to think about, like you'd forget your bike shoes or your helmet or something like that, whereas running, just put on a pair of trainers. But you have to remember a sports bra if you're a woman, but apart from that, you're pretty much good to go, aren't you?
Yeah. Pretty much. Maybe a waterproof up here in the Lake District.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and some snacks. With your running, you've broken various records, like the Paddy Buckley, the Lakeland 24 Hour, and you still hold the Winter Bob. And you've been British trail running champion that you were in 2014, and you won the Lakeland 50 as well. Is there a particular achievement that you're most proud of, or is it just the next one that comes?
I guess the there's two that stick out for me. First would be running at World Championships for Great Britain in 2015 in Annecy, and winning that team bronze medal. That was a real proud moment of my sporting career. And then the other one that would stand out would have been breaking the 24-hour fell record that had stood quite a long time at that point, and adding a top and making it 78.
Yeah.
Just in that 2020 COVID year was a standout as well.
Yeah, that was fantastic. And I think even more of an achievement is then helping Andy Berry to break that time. So he didn't add an extra summit. He just did it in a little bit quicker time, didn't he? So kind of joint, really, aren't you? I just think that is a really good achievement as well. And that's sort of the ethos of fell running, isn't it? That you help the next person along. I think that's just really nice.
Yeah, and I'm also coach for Andy. So it's kind of a double-edged sword a little bit. You know, there's always that ego inside you that wants to keep a record, but then the other side is that you want to help and support, and records are there to be broken. And so it's great to be able to coach and then actually on the day help support and encourage and to achieve that record. So it created a big smile on my face. Even though I'd lost the record, it was still great to see Andy experience that moment too.
Yeah, well, if you're his coach as well, you can take some of the credit really for that record again, can't you? You just basically told him, do what I did, but just go a bit faster. So, you know, do you think you'll be back to try that record again, or do you like to go on to new things?
No, I think I like to go on to new things. I know what it took me to invest into that record. And I think I'm getting to that stage in my career where I'm enjoying exploring new challenges and new adventures and pushing myself in slightly different ways. And then how to share knowledge and improve the coaching side, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. It's interesting what makes different people tick, because some people go back and do things again and again and again, don't they? But yeah, I'm very much with you. I like to do new things, and you know, I don't mind what the time was on that thing. I'm just like, well, it's next one now. That's very much like the adventure racing sort of outdoor instructing sort of vibe, isn't it? To do new things and explore.
Yes. Definitely the sense of adventure. It's key for a lot of my races. There's only a few that I go back to, and that's usually where I've failed or not had the success that I have to go back and see if I can make things right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Monte Rosa was a race where everything seemed to go really right for you and Josh, was it? Because it's an interesting race. I was just researching this. I've known about it for a long time, but I've never actually interviewed anybody about it. So finding out about this race this morning has been really interesting. So it's Europe's highest race, because it the summit of Monte Rosa is 4,554 metres high. It's also the birthplace of sky running, which is where this dude called Marino Giacometti made the first ascent in 1989 in 3 hours 57, and then during the 90s loads of what's called sky running races were launched. So do you know, we've got a question from Tadeusz, who's watching live here, and he says he wants to know a bit more about like what is sky running, because he says, is there a difference between sky running events and just technical trail races? Is it just the overall height? Do you happen to know that, Kim, or shall I just quickly Google it?
Sky running, kind of the ethos is going to perhaps more of the summits and generally a little bit more technical in nature. And they're not afraid to go off the trail, so to speak. So this one was obviously going to the covers across glaciers and snow, and involves more challenges than running on lower level trails. So yeah, it's probably a bit like more like transitioning towards fell running, where you're not so restricted to this is a trail. But with sky running, they are marked like trail races, so you follow a flagged, marked route. But
so sort of harder underfoot and in altitude, but not navigationally. Ah, interesting. So more of a like a pitting of physical strength rather than like, you know, intelligence of map reading sort of thing. It's just like pure beasting.
So it involved, does generally involve more technical of type terrain than say a UTMB type ultra trail race. Those sort of challenges as well.
Yeah, it says that they're supposed to be over 2,000 metres in altitude as well, and they've got some climbing difficulty with like grade 1 to 2 scrambling. How do you train for a race at altitude in the UK? That is the big question.
Training for it in the UK, you can replicate the ascent and descent by just doing more of the one hill. Obviously that becomes a bit easier in places like North Wales and the Lake District in Scotland, because you can get some fairly good long climbs and descents, not the same as the Alps, but you add a few of those up and you've got several thousand metres of ascent in a long, long day. Obviously in Norfolk it becomes a little bit more challenging to
get up down those stairs.
In terms of the altitude aspects, then they say using heat is a poor man's altitude acclimatization. That you can get quite a lot of adaptions from following a heat adaption protocol. Try and improve your readiness for altitude.
Yeah.
But the number one thing is being as fit as possible. Mm-hmm. And then the rest is a smaller helps. But that's kind of why we went out 10 days before the race to try and get up high and get over that first week of adaptations where your body starts to adjust and you start to feel not so great and then you start to feel better again. So we're lucky to get that in beforehand and actually feel okay at that height. Clearly it's hard work and the breathing's a little bit deeper and more labored, but that's like any race. And you definitely notice the difference between day two and race day at being at above 4,000 metres.
Yeah, gosh, it's so high, isn't it, that I climbed Mount Toubkal, which is kind of like, I don't know, 4,000-ish metres high, and I tried to run to the last 100 metres to the summit, and I was just breathing so hard as if I just sprinted, I just was trying to jog, and I was just, it just felt like I'd sprinted 100 metres, like at trying to beat Usain Bolt or something. It was really hard to run. So that's amazing that you felt okay at that height, because the race isn't that long, is it? It's 35K, but it's got 3,490 metres of vertical climb. I've just got a little picture of the gradient profile here that I'm going to put up. So it says on this that it's got a vertical climb of 7,000 metres, but then in the actual race blurb, it says that it's 3,490. So I don't know if they mean up and down by that.
They mean up and down.
Yeah, okay. So they mean vertical and ascent and descent. There, that confused me. And I noticed that you guys were actually the first British team, you and Josh Wade. So all the rest were Italians who presumably can maybe train there or train at that kind of similar altitude. So that's just fantastic. And I only noticed two British teams even finished. I don't know if more entered, but that's amazing. You did it in 5.5 hours and the winners, they took 4.5. It just looked absolutely incredible. You have to run it in pairs though, so you were with Josh. Why do you have to run it in pairs?
Well, it's kind of a very niche event and probably only known if you know sky running that well, that this event kind of exists. The reason you have to go up as pairs is because above a certain height, you're then going across glaciers. And so you have to be roped together so that if one of you would happen to fall down a glacier, or down a crevasse, sorry, the other one's there to stop you falling and going too far. And on the day, there's lots of guides and marshals out on support to help with any sort of rescue. And you also had to wear harness, helmet, micro spikes to have the right equipment to be able to travel across that type of terrain. And at certain points, they put in some fixed line ropes where you had to clip on like Via Ferrata style, so that if you were to slip on that steeper slope, you're only going to go to the next little clip. So yeah. just basically from a safety perspective, you need to do it as a pair.
Yeah. So did you and Josh train a lot in the UK together to sort of see how you worked as a team?
Not too often. Occasionally we've been out for some long runs together, and we know we're fairly similar in terms of ability and ascending and descending skill. My problem is that is more about the age factor now, that Josh is 28 and training and recovering like a 28-year-old, full of confidence. And I'm now a master, and trying to keep up with Josh was my hardest challenge. But in a pairs race, you always know that someone's going to be a slightly better than the other, and one of you's going to have a harder day than the other. And that was definitely me at the race.
Yeah. Oh, well, maybe there'll be a master's team next time.
Maybe.
And Tracy, who's just signed in to watch, so I'll ask her a question now. She just said she's missed the beginning, but she's here now. She says, what is Kim's choice of race vest and shoes and poles? Did you use poles on the Monte Rosa race?
Yes. Yeah, we had to have poles. I usually use a pair of Leckie micro trail poles because I like the clip-in system, and they're fairly light, so they've kind of been my normal go-to. Actually, for this race, I use some hand loops that were just, I thought that'd be easier for the snow conditions. That's a pair I had. And what was the second part of the question?
Shoes and vest.
Shoes, I used the Sportiva Ciclon Gore-Tex ones because they have the integrated gaiter.
Are they like a bootie type thing with a zip up? Yeah.
Like a bootie that zips up, and so they've got that over cover come close around the ankle. So that was really good for the.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.